46% of municipalities in South Africa think they are in a critical state, or basically in a crisis state, where they're not able to fulfill their water and sanitation mandate.
Water availability is one of the biggest threats facing South Africa's people and businesses. This was brought into sharp focus when Cape Town, known for its natural beauty and wine routes, became synonymous with something much more difficult to sell to tourists, the so-called Day Zero. The prospect of the mother city having no water made the entire country reevaluate the true value of the resource and what can be done to protect it. Hi, I'm Karabo Sekgoto, and welcome to another Investec Focus Radio podcast brought to you by Investec Environmental Sustainability. In light of this crisis, I spoke to an environmental scientist to give us a clear idea of the scope of the problem facing our country.
Hi, my name is Alex McNamara. I lead the water program at the National Business Initiative. Brief background, I'm an environmental scientist and I've worked in the environmental sector for about 15 years. I've worked specifically in water for the last 6 years, leading the water program at the NBI, and I have an MSc in environmental change and management.
Alex, what did we learn from the Cape Town water crisis in 2017-2018?
So as the NBI, we helped set up a drought task force for the Western Cape. We started quite early on. This was sort of like early 2017 we formed this. And in our first meeting, we had to think collectively between business, government, and civil society in the room. How would we deal with a scenario where Cape Town, for example, which has got 4 million people, didn't have water for more than 2 weeks? And the scenario has become quite daunting. So the first thing we had to think about was, well, the refinery would most likely no longer be able to run because you wouldn't have water. At the same time, obviously, you'd have people starting to queue for water. They would be worried about getting their daily sort of supply of water, so they would probably not even necessarily go to work. And then we started thinking about, but actually there are other risks in the system as well. One of the things is that for retailers, if they can't offer water and sanitation services for their employees after a certain length of time, they have to close. So, in other words, they didn't have a backup water supply, which many of the sort of shopping malls don't have. They would effectively then close their doors as well. So you'd have a scenario where you most likely would have fuel shortages, you would have water shortages, and you would start to have food shortages at the same time. One of the things we found in our work in the Western Cape that's quite interesting is the importance, obviously, of water in addressing fire risk, which sounds like a very obvious statement. If there's a fire, the sprinklers come on, everybody evacuates the building and everything's going to be fine. But what happens if there isn't water and there's a municipal shortage that day? Or, more importantly, what happens if the pressure is too low and the sprinklers don't actually work on the top few floors of your building? So I think the reality of no water is it's not a great place to be. On the other hand, we know that there are already, you know, parts of the country where this is a reality. Many rural populations don't have reliable water access, but many towns in the country are also facing water shortages. So just as an example, there was an article released a few months ago saying that there are about 50 towns in South Africa have been reported to have water shortages of some kind or another.
So if so many people in SA are already trying to survive with water shortages, and almost half of our municipalities think they are incapable of doing their job, what can be done to alleviate this ticking time bomb?
The good news is there are lots of ways to solve for it. So we have technologies, and if we look at just what's happening in the sort of Arab region, we know that things like desalinization are a long-term solution, provided we have sufficient access to power. So desal is a good option, but you also need to have access to power. So if you have power shortages, your ability to run large-scale desal plants could be affected.
What about the state of our water treatment plants?
About 44% of our water treatment works are currently dysfunctional. So that means they're not providing water treatment to the adequate standard we would like. And just over 50% of our wastewater treatment works are dysfunctional, which means they're not properly treating sewage and then discharging it into other river bodies at an acceptable level or acceptable standard. So we have some major infrastructure challenges that we have to face. We face issues around pumping stations that are not necessarily functioning as we'd like them to. When they break down, there can be water shortages in certain areas. And we need to obviously upgrade our various pipeline networks as well. We reckon we need to spend about 900 billion rand over the next 10 years on water and sanitation. Mostly big infrastructure, and only about two-thirds of that do we feel we actually have the money for at the moment.
How will climate change affect our water supply?
So, unfortunately, I think as you might have probably imagined, climate change is not necessarily a good news story for South Africa. We will most likely have double the amount of temperature rise as the rest of the world experiences from climate change. So let's just use a hypothetical example. If the whole world warms on average by a further 2 degrees Celsius, we would be looking at effectively a warming of actually about closer to 4 degrees in Southern Africa and obviously then in South Africa. So that's a lot of warming. I have to give you an example that I've often used. If we were to cool the Earth by 5 degrees, we would enter an ice age. So you have to imagine warming the Earth by 4 degrees would completely transform our society and our natural environment. So one of the things that international scientists have been trying to work out is what is effectively, if we can call it, a safe level of climate change or a safe level of warming. And pretty much they have decided that the world as a whole cannot warm by more than 1.5 degrees Celsius against, you know, the sort of pre-industrial temperatures. To give you an idea, the world is already warmed by 1 degree. So we already have 0.5 degree left that we can warm as a globe. And even a 1.5 degree warming across the world is going to result in, you know, closer to a 3 degree warming in South Africa. So it's a very, very significant effect. If we think about some of the ramifications, what does this actually mean for us, specifically on water? The first thing we're having to deal with and we'll have to deal with increasingly is higher temperatures, so more heat waves, more higher average temperatures, more evaporation. So lots of water evaporating off the Vaal Dam, off many of our surface water bodies, and basically they will reduce much quicker. At the same time, we know that as temperatures increase, so human water consumption increases. If I can call it a double whammy, if you like. Essentially, on the one hand, it gets hotter, water evaporates more, and people need to drink more water as a whole. We can also obviously expect greater drought-related experiences and drought-related events, so we will have to plan and be ready for those, and be ready for the droughts being more intense and more frequent. Another area that's going to be particularly hard hit by climate change is agriculture. So what we'll most, depending obviously on the level of warming that we experience, but you know, in a sort of a 4 degree world, which is 4 degree temperature rise, the sort of wheat belt that we rely on in the Western Cape is mostly gone. Even sugarcane in KwaZulu-Natal is, you know, is heavily affected. And much of the northern parts of the country is no longer really fit for agriculture. It becomes a kind of a savanna, but dry savanna experience, where you effectively have, you know, acacia trees and sand.
So what can be done to turn this bad news story around?
Now, as I say, there are ways to address these kinds of issues. One of the key things we obviously have to do is conserve as much water as we can. We can also store water in dams that have lower evaporation rates, and we can store water underground. So we can store water in groundwater, and we can also reuse water. So one of the key things we need to do as a country is follow the route of Namibia and Singapore, California, and effectively reuse water multiple times. And the key phrase here is judge water by its quality, not by its history. So what are we talking about? We're talking about treating wastewater and turning it into direct drinking water that we can all drink, or at the very least, turning it into water that we can use in things like agriculture. I will say that there is leading technology in this field of what we call water reuse across the globe. If we look at the example of Orange County in California, the biggest water reuse facility in the world, they run a 3-step process where they take treated wastewater, they run it through filtration, then they apply reverse osmosis, and then they even use ultraviolet light to bring that water to a pristine standard. So in terms of that water quality, safe to drink, and if we look at the Orange County example, that will be amongst the most high quality water probably in the world.
Alex, I'd like to ask a question now that's half practical and half existential. How does one value water?
In most cases, the cost of water, if it's not provided to you free as a sort of indigent household, is considerably lower than what it actually costs to produce that water. So in the sort of technical speak, we don't really have cost-reflective water tariffs in this country. So we would certainly not say that the value of water is a reflection of the cost of actually producing it at this point in time. But there's also a wider question about how would you value water in an extreme scenario where you had very limited water supply? And of course, we have a quite recent example of just this. where we've had extreme droughts in parts of the country, including places like the Western Cape. And I guess the short answer is, if we don't value water at a much greater level, we will not achieve the sort of water security that we need as a country. And as we approach water scarcity, and as, of course, as you approach a situation where demand considerably outstrips supply, the value of water rises exponentially till it is probably almost infinite in its final drop, if we can put it that way. A good example, I guess, would be, you know, we are happy to pay for other goods and services. We're very happy to pay for data charges. We're very happy to pay for other luxury goods. But water is an essential good, and we're not paying the true value of it at all. At the moment, most of our municipalities that provide water sell water at a significant financial loss, and therefore people undervalue water as a result of that process as well. And at the same time, many of those municipalities then therefore can't collect enough revenue from water to reinvest in sustainable water access, essentially.
I know that we lose a frightening amount of water through leakages. Do you know the exact amount?
36% of all water in our country that runs through the municipal system never reaches your tap. It never reaches its destination. So in other words, there are billions of cubic meters of water lost every year to water leaks in this country. It is estimated at a 10 billion rand amount, you know, figure per annum in this country at the moment. So we're effectively throwing about 10 billion rand down the drain, literally, well, not quite down the drain, leaking through the pipe every single year. And it's a significant amount of water. It's over a third of all the water that's distributed in South Africa. So as a country, it's a national imperative that we reduce our water leakage. And much of that is a responsibility of our municipalities to ensure that they do upgrade their pipelines and their fixed water leaks. But there's an equal onus on everyday citizens as well.
So to sum up, what are the key challenges that we have to address as a matter of urgency if we are to achieve sustainable water access for all?
I think the first obstacle we have to address is, how do we improve basic service delivery at the municipal level? And that includes ensuring that we have enough adequate skills in those municipalities, making sure that they are billing their clients and their customers correctly, that they're improving their customer service levels so they get enough revenue into the system, and that they're basically able to manage their infrastructure and the management of their infrastructure correctly. So turning around municipal water service provision is probably our number one priority, because from there we can sustainably upgrade infrastructure, sustainably address leaks, and have reliable service to communities. We're also going to have to look at dry sanitation options for remote areas as well. And we're going to have to look seriously at how we deal with informal settlements and making sure that they have adequate sanitation, and that their solid waste disposal is also good as well, because that has a big ripple and knock-on effect on the quality of our river systems as well. So it's an all-encompassing challenge. So I think what we're going to see is South Africa is going to become and have a much more diverse water mix in the future, where we use groundwater, we use water, we use, and we obviously fix the leaks as well, and we start to embrace technologies like desalinization. And if we think about this at a city level, there are all of those opportunities combined in cities. And kind of the good news as well is that we're an urbanized country, and we're consistently urbanizing. So if we can solve for our urban challenges, we will solve for a lot of the key things we have to address.
Well, I appreciate your expertise and your positivity on a challenge that can seem insurmountable. Thanks for your time. That was Alex McNamara, a water expert at the NBI. This is a podcast brought to you by Investec Environmental Sustainability. Thank you for listening. I hope you'll join us again next time on Investec Focus Radio. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Views expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm and should not be taken as advice or recommendation. Investec Specialist Bank, a division of Investec Bank Limited, is a registered credit provider.